Happy Thursday. Welcome into the Chris Raby Show on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. The Thursday, February 25th, 2021 edition of the program. Talking some hoops with Gary Parrish of CBS Sports. You read him at CBSSports.com. You see him on your television and you hear him on radio in Memphis, Tennessee. Gary Parrish joining me in just a moment. Don't forget, subscribe to the Scoops with Danny Mac podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. Leave a review. Take a screenshot of that great review. And shoot it over to me on Twitter at CHRABE, and we will put you in a drawing for some Scoops with Danny Mac swag. So do that, do it now, and spread the word about the Scoops with Danny Mac podcasts, including the Chris Raby Show and all the great content, including Bernie Miklas over at ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. Gary Parrish joins us to talk a little college basketball, and I want to ask you first, man, amidst all of the challenges of the past year, because that's all that anyone talks about. What's one thing about the way things have changed that maybe you kind of like at this point? Like from a coverage standpoint, from your job standpoint?
Well, you know, personally speaking, I love my jobs and I love being in New York City and I do enjoy traveling. But if you're trying to, like, so I look forward to doing that again. And I can't wait for next season, although I will start traveling next month back and forth to New York. And I believe I'm going to the Final Four in Indianapolis. So I will start traveling again soon. That's the way I prefer to do my job. But if you're looking for, you know, hey, it's not what you want, but here's a benefit of it. I'm here every day. You know, I've been home every day since last March 11th. I haven't been away from my kids or my wife for nearly a year without exception. And that is just not for me. My children have never known me to be here every day. My oldest son who just turned 18 earlier this week, when he was little, one time we were driving past Memphis International Airport. We were going to like a birthday party or something. And you know, cause you lived here, the interstate, you drive right past the airport. Like you see it. And we were driving right past the airport and he saw it and he said, "Oh, there's daddy's house." And I was like, "What?" And he was like maybe 4 years old. And he said, "Yeah, that's where daddy lives." And I said, "What?" What he thought was that, sure, I come and stay with him and his mom, you know, every once in a while, but then they would take me because they would always drop me off. But then they take me and they drop me off at my house and I stay at my house for a few days and then I come back. And I was like, what kind of life am I living that my son thinks I live at? My son thinks I have a second house and the second house is actually the airport.
Kind of smart that he pieced that together, though. Maybe RC, the old Memphis athletic director, got to him because wasn't he like planning the whole we've got a great airport, like hanging his hat on that?
That was part of his conference realignment pitch, is that Memphis has a world class airport, believe it or not. So
your son was just ahead of the curve.
So I've never forgotten that story. But if I'm being honest, I've never really changed my lifestyle. Like I still travel a lot. And so this pandemic, listen, if I could snap my fingers and make it go away, I'd snap them a million times. But one good byproduct of it is that I've been present every day. I take my kids to school every day, and that's, I'm ready to not do it again and get back to doing my job the other way, but I'm trying to make the best of it.
You know, I wonder if to some extent, GP, that there will be some efficiency or some aspects of the way all industries do things that are streamlined out of this. And I think you and I talked a couple months ago when you were on the show about like conference scheduling, and maybe it makes a lot more sense for schools and, you know, programs to think about scheduling geographically so that they could cut down on travel expenses, cut down on the time that they're traveling. You know, you can take more buses, you don't have to charter, you can do trips that are just a day. I mean, that's like the top end of it. But then you think about all the little ways that, that maybe we can hopefully take a little bit of efficiency out of the challenges that have been handed to us.
I think there are going to be very few industries that don't that aren't forced into doing things a different way because of COVID, and then realized, you know what, maybe we should just keep doing this way. And in other words, I've been, you know,
you think like the traditional office could be done,
not completely, but certainly downsized, and in some places non-existent. Like if you are, and I know, like I've read about this enough that it's a real turn in Manhattan. Like my agent has an office in Manhattan. He has not been there since last March. He has not set foot in that office since last March, but he still does his jobs well. He still, you know, he still got my contracts done when it was time to get my contracts done. And so at what point does his employer, which is CAA, go, okay, do we really need all this office space in Manhattan? Like, could we get office space half the size or a third of the size and not spend X amount of dollars per month on that office space? Now take that and multiply by everybody who rents office space in Manhattan. Like that's a real concern if you own a skyscraper right now. Like we could talk for hours about, you know, different ways things are going to change. Like I did sideline reporting, quote sideline reporting, from my home on a Conference USA game a few weeks ago. Now I don't think that's going to be the new normal, but I do think that we have been watching games all season, whether you know it or not, when the commentators are just sitting in a studio in Bristol or in New York City. And I wonder, you know, not whether CBS will send, you know, Jim Nantz and Clark Kellogg to a Gonzaga versus Iowa game, but will you send a crew to Laramie, Wyoming for a Wyoming Air Force CBS Sports Network game that tips off at 11 o'clock Eastern? Maybe you say, you know what, we'll just do that one from the studio in New York. You know, to circle back to college scheduling, I think you're exactly right. You know, why are we going to fly to we're in Florida. Why are we going to fly to California for a non-league game when we can play somebody closer that can be a bus ride instead of a chartered flight? I just think the way we do things in like, you know, actual ways are going to be different. Like I still think you're going to maybe see people flying with masks on, but the way companies operate in terms of trying to find more efficient ways to do things, I think the pandemic has forced people to do things a different way. And then they're going to realize, hey, we can do it this way. So why don't we just do it that way? It's less expensive and more convenient.
Hanging with Gary Parrish, one thing that you can't really prepare for from a competition standpoint is a layoff. We've seen locally around St. Louis, SLU deal with a significant layoff. Baylor just dealt with it, and you wrote about them earlier today in the top 25 and won. What have you taken from watching teams and watching elite teams return to action? And I guess maybe the biggest takeaway is that there's no kind of roadmap. You can't, you know, in a, I guess, profession or industry where so much is data driven and you know, the most data possible, this is something unprecedented, and you know, programs don't really know how they're going to deal with this or when they're going to have to deal with it.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, college basketball teams have never taken 3 weeks off in, you know, between games in the regular season, but like they're forced into it in this season. And I really don't think you can say with any degree of certainty how a team will respond to a long layoff, although I think one scenario is more likely than the other, and that scenario is you're going to look like you haven't played in a while. And it's not just because, you know, you forgot how to run offense. It's mostly conditioning stuff. You know, like when Baylor goes on COVID pause, you know, it's not like what we say is Baylor's not playing games right now. What goes unsaid is Baylor's not practicing right now. Baylor's not working out right now. You know, Baylor's got three starters that are in isolation in an apartment that they can't go get on a treadmill. They can't go, you know, they can dribble a ball in their legs. You lose basketball shape. And so what comes back, what happens when you come back? Well, you're used to playing at a high level, high intensity, you know, 7-8 minutes at a time. Well, now you can only do that 3-4 minutes at a time, 5-6 minutes at a time. And so you see Baylor come back on Tuesday night. They're playing Iowa State. Iowa State hasn't won a Big 12 game all season. And Baylor's down 17 points in the first half, down steel with 5 minutes to go. They ultimately avoided the upset, won the game because they're great and the other team's bad. But if Baylor would have been playing a good team, even a decent team on Tuesday night, I think Baylor probably would have lost. So that's one example. And I think that's the more likely scenario. But the reason you can't say that's absolutely how it's going to go is because of Gonzaga. Gonzaga went on a 19-day layoff in December. They come back. They're playing Iowa. It's like a real opponent. It's not Iowa State. It's like a nationally ranked Iowa team. I think was at the top in the top five at the time. And they just ran them off. Gonzaga won by double digits, shot 50% from the field, 50% from three. They were great upon their return. But I think, honestly, that's just something unique to Gonzaga. I think Gonzaga is just great. And for the most part, the other teams are going to struggle. And you obviously are closer to it than I am. But, I mean, St. Louis is maybe the biggest example. I mean, they were looking like a borderline top 25 team, if not a top 25 team, period. And they come back and take two quadrant three losses immediately that damaged their resume. It's tough. You know, Scott Drew said after Tuesday night's Baylor game that he called the round to, he didn't say who, but like it could have been Travis Ford or, you know, Mark Few or Jay Wright, and asked them, hey, so what was it like? What did you do while you were out? And what was it like when you came back? And how long did it take before you felt like you had your team back? And he said most coaches told him two or three games. But I wonder if Travis wouldn't say, I still don't have my team back. We're the same as we were before we went on pause.
Well, and it's not just that, GP. It's the math, too, right? Because with the layoff and with the A-10 moving the tournament up a week, SLU is going to miss, what, I think three games on their conference schedule that they may really, really, really end up needing if push comes to shove. And it's not going to help them. It could only hurt them in that case, right?
Well, you need games. If you're on the wrong side of the bubble, and I think SLU is right now, you need opportunities. And, if you don't have them, it's like you need three birdies to win a tournament. Obviously a golf comparison here.
And you only get to play two holes. Yeah.
Right. It's a problem. You need three birdies, but you got one hole left. Like we talk about this a lot in my hometown, Memphis, because the Tigers just came off a COVID pause and they lost while on pause, a quad one opportunity at Wichita State and a quad one opportunity against Houston. Now they might get one of those, but nobody seems to think they're going to get them both back. And there's a little bit of an argument within the city, like, well, do you really want them both back? Because what if you lose one of them? And the point I've tried to make is, you know, Memphis is not, you know, got a two-shot lead on the field. Again, golf. And now you can just, hey, let's hit irons off the tee and then, you know, put it in the middle of the green, two-putt par, move on. Memphis is like three shots back and with three holes to play. You need to go flag hunting. You know, you need to take some risk. And the risk would be, give me every quad one, quad two opportunity you can give me, because that's the only way to enhance my resume. It is a real problem for lots of bubble teams right now. St. Louis, Memphis, among them. It's not just that you're on the quote wrong side of the bubble. It's that you lost opportunities that you might not get back. And it really could come down to, if you'd have had those games, you'd at least had a chance to add to your resume, because you didn't and you did damage elsewhere.
Is it going to be even murkier, Gary, as we're visiting with Gary Parrish, because, you know, in a exercise that is so consistently nitpicked and argued about, selecting teams for the NCAA tournament, there's even less of a rubric this year because of the circumstances. It's kind of been like ripped in half and ripped up again, and you're trying to figure out how to put it back together. So like, if I ask you what does SLU need to do, is the outside of winning the A-10 tournament, is there even an answer to that question right now?
I do that. Well, there's never a definitive answer. It's like sometimes people talk about, there's never a definitive answer when it comes to bubble teams. Like if the question is, what does Gonzaga need to do to ensure it gets a one seed? It's like, just keep doing what you're doing. You're fine. You know, even if you lose a game, you're fine. But like when it comes to a bubble team, you know, there is no finish line in when it comes to making the NCAA tournament. It's not like you hear people all the time, nobody does this anymore, but it'd be like, you know, if you get to 20 wins, well, 20 wins doesn't mean anything. And it never actually did, but people said it all the time. You get to 20 wins, you're good. Well, not necessarily, probably, but not necessarily. There's a lot of things, like if you're top 30 at KenPom, you're probably going to make it. Only four teams that were top 30 on Selection Sunday in the past six NCAA tournaments didn't make it. So, like, that's a pretty good place to look. Like, if you're top 30 in KenPom, you should feel relatively safe. But there's not a whole lot of those types of things. And again, to the extent that there is a finish line, it moves on you. So right now, SLU is sitting here at, you know, 1-2 in quadrant one, 1-1 in quadrant two. So the way I typically look at it, because I know the selection committee looks at it similarly, is like, okay, what have you done in those first two quadrants? And right now, SLU is 2-3, and then they have two additional quad three losses. Now, without context, that might to you. Last teams in Jerry Palm's bracket or the last teams in Joe Lenardi's bracket, they're typically going to be around 500 in the first two quadrants if they have quad three losses as well. In fact, you know, Indiana lost on Wednesday night, but before that, Indiana was the last team in Jerry Palm's bracket, and they were like, I don't know, 7-8 or 8-9 in the first two quadrants with quad three defeats. And so the problem for SLU here is that there's just not a lot inside the first two quadrants. You know, it's only six games as opposed to some other bubble teams. You know, actually, it's only five games as opposed to like some other bubble teams have 15 games in the first two quadrants. And if you look at the remaining regular season schedule, you know, there's only one game left on it in the first two quadrants. That's Friday's game against Richmond. So the opportunities were very limited, A, because of they've taken some losses outside of the first two quadrants that are really damaging. I'd say the first thing you got to do, like, you got to win this game against Richmond. You can't take another Q2 loss when you don't know how many Q1, Q2 opportunities you're going to get in the A10 tournament. So is it possible to get an at-large bid? I guess that's the question most Billikens fans would want to know. And I'd say, yes, it is possible, but it becomes very, very unlikely if you lose another regular season game. Because if you lose to Richmond, it is a missed opportunity to add a win inside of the first two quadrants. And if you lose to, I guess it's UMass and George Mason, those are Q3 losses. They're going to kill you. So the first step is you got to close the regular season with three straight wins. And then you probably still have work to do in the A10 tournament, but then there is probably a possible path depending on who you play. That's the other thing that I think sometimes people get wrong. They go, well, what if we make it to the semifinals? Or what if we make it to the championship? It depends on who you beat to get there and who you lose to in the championship game. The selection committee doesn't care where you finish in your league, really, and they don't care how far you go in your conference tournament. Every game is simply a data point that goes onto a team sheet. And so if SLU were to get to the conference championship game and lose, but on that path, and I'm just throwing things out there right now, but on that path, you know, beat BCU, beat St. Bonaventure, and then get another quality win, however it works, then maybe that's good enough. But if they get to the championship game by beating a bad team and then beating another bad team and then beating another bad team and then they lose, well, that doesn't do anything for them. So it comes down to who you play, when you play them, but I do think it's still possible, but it's almost certainly going to be impossible if you lose another regular season game.
Speaking of the first couple of quadrants, Mizzou is, at least from my experience with the university, starting to kind of Mizzou all over themselves. Not a great stretch for Konzo Martin. Well, what have you noticed about the Tigers who are clinging to life? They're 26th in your top 25 and one this week.
Well, one of the things that I noticed very early on about this team is that it had an incredible resume, like some really big wins. I mean, they beat Oregon early. Now, Oregon was shorthanded, but like it's still a win over Oregon. They beat Illinois. They beat Arkansas, which has been surging lately. They beat Tennessee, which is still a top 25 team, at least for now. They beat Alabama, which is a projected 2 seed in the NCAA tournament right now. So they had big, big wins. And that's why they ended up in the top 10 and they were projected top 4 seed, all of that stuff. But the computer numbers never, ever replicated that. You know, they were all, there was a point where Missouri was top outside of the top 30 of most of the computers. And so what that tells you, especially if you're looking at KenPom, which is a predictive metric, what it tells you is that, yes, they are winning games, but, and I don't mean this in the traditional sense, getting lucky. Not like, oh, you're just lucky, but they were winning close games where that could have gone either way, and they just went their way. And so the predictive metrics weren't respecting Missouri as much as strict results-oriented approaches were respecting Missouri. For instance, when I rank teams, I don't get involved in, well, how'd they play? How'd they look? How many points per possession did they score? Did you win the game or did you lose the game? I'm trying to totally be results-based while also acknowledging other factors. But mostly I just want to, okay, what's your quad one record? What's your quad losses outside of that stack? For much of this season, Missouri was very good when you looked at them that way. But when you looked at their efficiency numbers, they weren't very good. And now it looks like all of this stuff, as it usually does, is starting to come together. They're now 1-4 in their past five games. They lost to Ole Miss twice, lost to a not good Georgia team. And so, you know, it's caught up with them a little bit. They started to perform to the level that the computers always said they were. And so are they in danger of missing the NCAA tournament? No, I don't think so. But, you know, there was a time where it looked like maybe Missouri could be a 2 seed or a 3 seed, and it looks like those days are probably over.
Ryan Kelly, the home loan expert, is one of the great sponsors of the program and Scoops with DannyMac.com. And right now is a perfect time to learn about a home loan refinance. You hear the word all the time, but maybe you don't even know what you're doing. Essentially, you're redoing your loan. So in terms of your first mortgage, you're retooling your loan. The home loan expert is paying off your current loan and giving you a brand new loan. You can decide the term, 30 years. You can go shorter. Give them a call. Look at your current mortgage and ask the home loan expert, Ryan Kelly, if they can do anything to improve your situation. It all depends on your goal, and they will work with you. But everyone with a mortgage loan can benefit from calling Ryan Kelly, the home loan expert, today for a free mortgage analysis. Go to thehomeloanexpert.com, thehomeloanexpert.com. Learn about not just the incredible loan offers that they have, but also the incredible customer service, their customer-first approach that separates them from anyone else you could get a mortgage through. Ryan Kelly is the home loan expert online at thehomeloanexpert.com. Schnucks Rewards, one more reason to love Schnucks. Get the app that gets you Schnucks Rewards. The Schnucks Rewards app allows you to earn points every time you shop for money off your next purchase. But there's so much more in the app to simplify shopping. For instance, you can get exclusive digital savings, including over 100 new digital coupons every week. The shopping list helps keep you organized. Add items on the go, plus you can share it. Recipes in the app make meal planning easy. Search for recipes by ingredients and add them to your shopping list. Go to schnucks.com and check out more about the app that gets you Schnucks Rewards, the Schnucks Rewards app. Download it on the App Store or Google Play. The Schnucks Rewards app rewards you for shopping at Schnucks. Tell me the other fan bases that you would put under this umbrella, GP, the fan base that always thinks that they are, I don't want to say cursed, but just bad things generally do happen to them, like Michael Porter Jr., or like some tragic losses both in basketball and football. And again, I fly very close to the sun, but I think Mizzou probably has a decent claim. Can you think of any other fan bases of both basketball and football who kind of feel a little Mizzou-y?
I can tell you in men's basketball, the most self-loathing fan base is Maryland. Maryland fans, okay, it's like most fan bases, they tend to, when you rank their team, they tend to, as somebody who ranks 26 teams every morning, like I hear from everybody, and most fan bases, if they have a team that's ranked, they think you have them ranked too low. So like if you have Virginia at 14, Virginia fans are like, you're not paying attention. Virginia's easy time. And if you have Iowa 10th, Iowa fans don't know why you don't have them 7th. They always think you've got them too low. If you were to rank Maryland at any point under Mark Turgeon, basically, Maryland fans would be like, we're not that good. Like, we suck. They really do hate their own team. I mean, it's just, and it's because, you know, they had some really, I mean, they won a national championship under Gary Williams, and there's no real reason Maryland shouldn't be one of the great basketball programs in America. And under Turge, it's just been good. But it has been good. But it's just been good. And so that's the fan base that I have noticed for several years now, that I don't know that they expect everything to go wrong. They just hate their team, and they hate every year. They think their team's
a tough look.
If their team's bad, they think it's the worst team in the world. And if their team's good, they don't really think it's that good. And I think it's probably rooted in, like, Turge hasn't had a great team yet, which is why, you know, my private would be public. If you can get the Wichita State job, go get the Wichita State job. You know, he's from Kansas. His parents still live there. You know, Wichita State's got big money boosters. I don't know if he can, because they might just give it to their interim, Isaac Brown, who's like in first place in the AAC right now. But Turge needs a parachute out of there, because his own fans are just, if they ever loved him, I'm not sure, but they don't anymore. They're bored with it. And his next really bad season will be his last one. A little bit like Indiana at Tom Crean. Like, they just got tired of it. You know, they just wanted something different. And now they got something different. It's not better, but it's different. Maryland fans have got to the point where they just want something different. So I know I drifted a lot of different ways, but
no, that's good.
That's the fan base that comes to mind. That's the fan base that comes to mind when you ask, when you ask what you asked. Like, Maryland fans hate their own team.
Yeah, I think that's perfect. Let me ask you too, before we wrap up, about Illinois, because they've just kind of gone about their business, GP. How have you seen this Illini team evolve, if at all, over the course of the season? As, again, it seems like they, I don't know, at least around these parts, like, they've kind of done it kind of quietly, if that's possible.
Yeah. I mean, I think Io has gotten an incredible amount of attention.
Sure.
But he's a real national player of the year candidate. You know, I think people had some questions about Illinois maybe when they started 5-3, because, like, none of us expected them to start 5-3, but you know, they've been pretty good, if not great, for a while now. And I know they're coming off a loss at Michigan State, but the truth is, like, that's just going to happen to most teams. You know, it just, somewhere in your schedule, you're going to play a team that was supposed to be good. They haven't been good, but they're going to get you, because on this night they played to their ability. In fact, if you read any of the quotes from the Michigan State players after they upset Illinois, it was like, we're just frustrated because we haven't played like this all season, and we know we can play like this. You know, the Michigan State was a preseason top 20 team. So in a vacuum, if I just told you, yeah, in February, Illinois is going to have its 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 game winning streak snapped on the road by single digits to a preseason top 20 team coached by a Hall of Famer, you'd be like, okay, no big deal. But, like, in the context of this season and the way it's unfolded, I think people looked at that and were like, oh, like, that's a tough loss. But the truth is, again, I wake up every morning, I rank 26 teams. I think I had Illinois 4 or 5. Before that game, I've got Illinois 6 after that game. If you look at the resume, it's still top 10 in the country, top 2 seed, 7-6 in quadrant 1, 11-6 in the first 2 quadrants, 0 losses outside of quadrant 1. So they've taken, you know, more losses than you might like. There's no bad one. You know, eventually we're going to get a bracket. They're going to be in it, and they're going to be seeded very highly. And when you've got a guard like Ayo Dosunmu and a big like Kofi Coburn and a coach like Brad Underwood, you've got a chance. Again, Gonzaga is the favorite to win this championship, and it should be. You know, Sportsline actually takes Jerry Palm's bracket, you know, every time it updates, and they then simulate it 10,000 times. And over, you know, for about a month now, Gonzaga has been winning the NCAA tournament about 31% of the time.
That's unbelievable.
It's like historically unusual and great. What was interesting, and this changed a little bit after Baylor's struggle with Iowa State, but what was interesting is before Baylor's struggle with Iowa State, if you simulated it 10,000 times, Gonzaga won it like 31% of the time, and Baylor won it like 19% of the time. In other words, half the time it was Gonzaga or Baylor. Like, we really were for the field. And I don't know if it's like that anymore, but Gonzaga is clearly the favorite. That's the point. But Illinois, if you're trying to, you know, name 5 teams not named Gonzaga that can win the whole thing, you'd be crazy, at least in my opinion, to not have Illinois.
All right, I'll
put
you on the spot to come full circle with the evolution, streamlining things, being more efficient. Will this year lead to, at least to some extent, the centralization earlier of this tournament?
meaning let's bring everybody to one place. Like,
I don't know if it means that, but will we see a change? Like, assuming that you could go back next year to the way everything was, will we see a change based on maybe the way things hopefully go this year if all goes well? Because, I mean, you've been on the side of just have, you know, like, or I know people have said just have, like, the Super Bowl every year, have the Final Four every year in Indianapolis, for instance. It's just so efficient.
Yeah, Indy is a great city for hosting big events because it checks every box. Like, I remember we had the Final Four in Detroit several years ago, and I wrote a column. And it's not the type of column I would write today, but it's the type of column I would write then. And it was just like, you know, this was not great. And people thought I was crapping on Detroit, and I wasn't. The point I was trying to make is, like, first off, it's you know, it's freezing. Like, let's just start there. Like, you want people to be outside and enjoying themselves and snowing, literally snowing. But the lot bigger than that was half the coaches were in Canada. You know, the other half were in Detroit. People were spread out. And the point I've made about the Final Four is that it is best when it's in a city that checks these boxes. It has a dome in a downtown. It has all of the nice hotels within walking distance of that dome, and it has all of the nice and then walking distance of the hotels in the dome. In other words, you take an Uber to your hotel, you check in, and you don't get back in a car, period, until you're ready to go back to the airport. Indianapolis provides that. Detroit does not. Guess what else doesn't? LA. Like, LA is an amazing city. I would love to, like, I'd love to live in LA, but it doesn't check that box. Dallas does not check that box. Houston does not check that box. But the cities that do are Indianapolis, New Orleans, San Antonio for the most part. And then this one actually doesn't get brought up nearly as often, but I've always made it part of the conversation. St. Louis. You know, you can basically do that in St. Louis. And so if you're making the argument for just put the Final Four in Indianapolis, it's rooted in that. Indianapolis is perfect in terms of a setup. But to answer your initial question, the NCAA has said, and I don't believe them on everything, but I believe them on this, they want to get back to doing business the way they used to do business as soon as possible. They want, you know, they want a regional in, you know, California. They want another regional, you know, at the Superdome. They want another regional, you know, wherever. I think they want to get back to spreading this out all around the country. And I think they will, but it is going to be fascinating to like watch this thing unfold because it's going to be wild. You get seated in the bracket and then you're not waiting to find out where you're going. You're going to Indianapolis and then you check in a hotel. All right, guys, we're staying here until we lose a game. And when we lose a game, we're gone. But this is where we live until we lose a game. Like, it'll be unlike anything we've ever seen.
It's a reality show. It's literally reality TV.
Right, right. So the whole thing's going to be wild. My only hope is that it goes smoothly, like that we don't have some, you know, just a nightmare situation. Like, three Gonzaga players test positive, you know, 2 days before the start of the NCAA tournament. Now, what do we do? It's just, I hope we don't run into that, but obviously nobody can guarantee that we won't.
Yeah, Xavier Pinson will, like, break both his legs from Mizzou or something. That's exactly what will happen. GP, you're the best, man. We'll talk leading up to the tournament, and keep up the great stuff, man, on the pod, the Ion College Basketball Pod with Matt Norlander, and it's CBS, and on every platform that CBS offers. You are you're a welcome sight on all of my digital devices, my friend.
That's really nice. Appreciate you, brother. Always good talking to you.
All right, man.